Welcome to Audio Stages. I'm Hal Linden. Tonight we're presenting a sampler of How Green Was My Valley by Roger Ames and Elizabeth Bassine, based on the novel by Richard Llewellyn. How Green Was My Valley paints a panoramic vision of a time and place that, though long gone, is still with us in many ways. Set in a coal mining town in early 20th century South Wales, we're introduced to several families and characters, focusing primarily on one family, the Morgans. We follow them through the turbulence of religious bigotry, profit-driven greed, politics, family strife, and the struggles of organized labor during the early days of modern capitalism. Here's the opening number. Starts with a tragic mine cave-in. As it settles to calm Hugh, his youngest son, Gwillem, head of the Morgan household, waxes poetic about life as a miner in the Evans mine.
Beneath the sky, the shadows long.
Pastor Griffith officiates at the marriage of Gwillem's oldest son, Ivor, to Bronwyn, the beautiful girl from over the mountain, and joyfully sings about building a family.
Echo gorgeous garden it is, you know. With some beasts, a woman, and a man. God made a canopy under the trees, and he marveled as romance began. He watched the birds, the bees, and the tadpoles and the fishes, but Adam and Eve were a bit overdue. God said he'd grant them a few little wishes if they'd agree to make a little love too. So with God's good gift of imagination, they felt a new sense of elation. I ask you now with some self-examination, what's wrong with the little fertilization? It's sure to be the next big sensation. Spot for a picnic and brewed some herbal teas. Adam said, pass the honey sugar, and where is the dessert, if you please? What's your poison? Asked Eve. Well, Adam clarified, while under God's heaven we lie, I would love some fresh apple pie. So, right on cue, a serpent passed by, and he cut them a piece of that freshly baked pie. Here you are now, don't be shy. Then asked Adam and Eve, apple pie, a la mode? Thunderbolts cracked right out of the sky. Learn to love each other first before you get your apple pie, because you need to multiply. True love is the first and the last of my wishes. You'll find that making love is just delicious. I love you both, said God. You're a sensation. You fit right in my plan of procreation. So praise love, don't blame it, is my observation. So praise love, don't blame it, is my observation.
Hugh Morgan, a very sharp 13-year-old, is entirely smitten by his brother's bride and sings of his love for her.
There is strange, I feel, a giddy boy, a king, only from a kiss, the smallest thing, a small, tasty kiss, a delectable treat. Who needs toffee now? It's not half as sweet, not half as sweet. Wild blackberries then, on the soft lips of spring, and just from a kiss, the smallest thing, a small, a tasty kiss, a most excellent treat. Nothing can hurt me, my life is complete. Wild blackberries grow with awakening spring, harsh winds may blow, but the robin must sing. Is this the secret that others share? Why haven't they told me they haven't played fair? A powerful magic, this is to be sure. There's no turning back, there isn't a cure. That is strange, I feel, a giddy boy, a king, only from a kiss, the smallest thing. Kisses I taste on my lips once again. Boy who ate toffee will no more be ten. A king now I am a king. And just from a kiss, the smallest thing, a king am I. Just from a kiss, a king.
Meanwhile, Pastor Griffith has unintentionally stolen the heart of another of the Morgan daughters, Anharad. She confesses her love for him, but in this beautiful duet, he explains that he has taken an oath of chastity and cannot return her love.
Why can't I be? Why can't I be? One tear caught in your eyelash, one dimple on your smile, one corner of your kerchief, one half your longest mile, one buckle on your bootstrap, one rap upon your door, one small thought in every
sacrifice then. It was
The miners are up in arms about dangerous conditions in the Evans mine, but the owners are resisting and replacing activists with out-of-work miners from other nearby mines that have closed. The local miners realize that they desperately need a strong union.
Exploiters they may, but resist them we will. It's down to the pit of their blood we will spill.
Having some credibility problems. He's given permission for the mine owner's son, Yeston, to woo his daughter, Unharid. Gwilym's wife, Beth Morgan, the family matriarch, confronts the miners. Decides to send his youngest boy, Hugh, away to the national school. But after getting there, Hugh's culture incites the wrath and enmity of his fellow students, and is given a brutal thrashing by his bigoted teacher, Mr. Jonas.
When I see a boy who needs grooming and tending, such a boy needs me to avoid a bad ending. A boy who's offending needs whipping and lashing. A boy who is brash asks for kicking and thrashing. Hail England and Empire, study in school. Correct the dirty, defective, the fool. His brain is less use than his back is for bending. Such a boy needs me to avoid a bad ending. The Welsh child is wanting in couth and in knowledge. His coal mining ways will not get him to college. A misdirected boy is he who loves black coal and looks unclean. But hear me now, you shall sound more English than our English queen. Hail England and Empire, study in school. Correct the dirty, defective, the fool. His brain is less use than his back is for bending. Such a boy needs me to avoid a bad ending. When the bowels of the earth are your homestead, and no vowel graces your tongue, then what do we do with the children? What have the Welsh done to their young? Hail England and Empire, study in school. Correct the dirty, defective, the fool. His brain is less use than his back is for bending. Such a boy needs me to avoid a bad ending.
A terrible mine explosion kills Ivor Morgan, and the entire town gathers to mourn. Act One ends as the other Morgan brothers decide to leave home in order to build new lives in the city.
Dimagariad velo morois, potiliae thai veluthin. Amatas arivaster, ecis truta
Two. It's now 8 years later, and we find Anharad married to Yeston Evans. She is, however, essentially estranged from her husband and despised by the Evans staff. Hugh Morgan, who has been caring for Bronn, Ivor's widow, and their son Gareth, pays Anharad a visit, and she confesses her misery to him.
To be warm, it takes a cloak of velvet long and lined with fur. To be warm, it takes a pair of boots of leather tall and fine. To be warm, it takes a pot of tea of silver, gold, and myrrh. All this and more have I, but cold my heart, cold my heart. I have a love that one way flows, a splendid life, a woman's dream, a handsome man with wealth supreme, but so empty am I, no one knows. To stay young, it takes a love that makes the sky look blue. To wear a smile, it takes a love that warms you through and through. To be true,
killed. Hugh decides to leave and visits Bronn, offering to take her with him. Bronn refuses Hugh's invitation. She'll stay near Ivor's grave, live her life in his memory, and take care of Gwilym's widow, Beth. But in an amazing final gesture of love, she asks Hugh to take with him her son, Gareth. Hugh sings of his sadness of having to leave Bronn.
A child I was when I fell in love. I can see her bright as day. A child I was with a heart I have still. I loved her then and I always will. From a world gone, the girl on the hill. Here I thought is beautiful, lovelier you will never see. Scent of lavender in the air, my daydreams always find her there. Here was fair Bronn, beautiful and fair. There's a look in the eyes of a man in love. Anyone can see it. Everyone knows you've known the unknowable or the longing to. You can't hide it. And so it goes, so it goes. While much for me is tangled memory, she stands before me. The child I was who fell in love is the man with a look in his eyes. He loves the girl with a long ago heart and a longing that time can't disguise. Child I was with a heart I have still. I loved her then and I always will. It was you, Brown, the girl on the
here's the finale of How Green Was My Valley.
Beneath the sky, the shadows long, wild and high, like my love and my soul. From the dark and the deep to the roar of the sea, remember you, remember me. The green of my valley reflects in your eyes, like the hills round the valley in your arms.
Sings a song of love.
You've been listening to an Audio Stages sampler of How Green Was My Valley by Roger Ames and Elizabeth Bassine. To finish out the hour, here's episode 6 of The Count of Monte Cristo.
We find Edmond Dantès, 6 years a prisoner, on the point of death by self-imposed starvation, suddenly revived by the providential sounds of movement just beyond the stone cell wall of his dungeon chamber, deep within the bowels of the Chateau d'If.
Who is it? Hello! He heard me. He stopped.
Hours passed, and Edmond waited for the sound to reappear, scratching with his spoon and with sharp fragments of stone at the place in the wall just beneath his bed from whence the sound had come.
Hello! Hello! Please answer me! Please!
Oh, my God. My God. After having deprived me of my liberty, after having deprived me of death, after having recalled me to existence, my God, have pity on me, and do not let me die in despair.
Who talks of God in despair at the same time?
A human voice! In the name of heaven, speak again, though the sound of your voice terrifies me.
Who are you?
An unhappy prisoner.
Of what country?
A Frenchman.
Your name?
Edmond Dantès.
Your profession?
A sailor.
How long have you been here?
Since the 28th of February, 1815.
Your crime?
I'm innocent.
But of what are you accused?
Of having conspired to aid the Emperor's return. But how long have you been here?
Since 1811.
1811?
How high up is your excavation?
On the level with the floor.
How is it concealed?
Behind my bed.
Has your bed been moved since you've been a prisoner?
No.
What does your chamber open on?
A corridor.
And the corridor?
On a court.
Oh, lass.
What's the matter?
I am deceived, and the imperfection of my plans has ruined all. An error of a line in the plan has been equivalent to 15 feet in reality, and I took the wall you are mining for the wall of the fortress.
But then you would have been close to the sea.
That is what I hoped.
And supposing you'd succeeded?
I should have thrown myself into the sea, gained one of the islands near here, the Isle de Dorme, or the Isle de Tiboulin, and then I was safe.
But could you have swum so far?
Heaven would have given me strength, but now all is lost.
All?
Yes. Stop up your excavation carefully. Do not work anymore, and wait until you hear from me.
But tell me at least who you are.
I am number 27.
You mistrust me then? Oh, I'm a Christian! I swear to you by him who died for us that naught shall induce me to breathe one syllable to my jailers. And I conjure you not to abandon me.
How old are you? The voice is that of a young man.
I've not counted the years since I've been here. All I know is that I was just 19 when I was arrested. On the 28th of February, 1815.
Not quite 26. At that age, you cannot be a traitor.
Oh, no, no, I swear to you again. Rather than betray you, they shall hew me to pieces.
You've done well, for I was about to form another plan and leave you. But your age reassures me. I will not forget you. Expect me.
When?
Tomorrow.
These few words were uttered with an accent that left no doubt of his sincerity. Dantès rose, and dispersed the fragments with the same precaution as before, and pushed back his bed against the wall. He then gave himself over to his happiness. All day long, Dantès walked up and down his cell. He would no longer be alone. He was, perhaps, he thought, about to regain his liberty. At the worst, he would have a companion. Once or twice, the thought crossed his mind that he might be separated from this unknown whom he loved already. And then his mind was made up. When the jailer moved his bed and stooped to examine the opening, he would kill him with his water jug. He would be condemned to die. But he was about to die of grief and despair when this miraculous voice recalled him to life. He occasionally sat down on his bed, pressing his hand on his heart, his mind and body resonating with the memories of his former happiness.
The sun's up. Here's your soup. Hey, 34, are you all right? Are you going mad?
No.
No, not yet, I fancy.
Yes, is it you? Wait, I'll move my bed. I'm here.
Your jailer gone?
Yes. He'll not return until evening, so that we have 12 hours before us.
I can work that.
Oh, yes, yes, this instant, I entreat you.
In an instant, the portion of the floor on which Dantès was leaning gave way. A mass of stones and earth disappeared into a hole that opened beneath the aperture he himself had formed. And then from the bottom of this passage, the depth of which it was impossible to measure, he saw appear first the head, and then the shoulders, and lastly the body of a man who carefully advanced into his cell. He was a man of small stature, white hair, a deep-set penetrating eye, and a long and still black beard reaching down to his breast. The stranger might have numbered 60 or 65 years, but a certain briskness and vigor in his movements made it probable that he was aged more from captivity than the course of time.
Let's see whether it is possible to remove the traces of my entrance here.
Oh, yes.
Our future comforts depend upon our jailers being entirely ignorant of it. You removed this stone very carelessly. But I suppose you had no tools to aid you.
Why? Do you possess any?
I made myself some.
Oh, well, I should like to see these products of your industry and patience.
Well, in the first place, here is my chisel.
Well, and with what did you contrive to make that?
With one of the clamps of my bedstead. And this very tool has sufficed me to hollow out the road by which I came hither, a distance of at least 50 feet.
What? 50 feet?
Do not speak so loud, young man. Don't speak so loud. It frequently occurs in a state prison like this that persons are stationed outside the doors of the cells purposely to overhear the conversation of the prisoners.
Oh, but they believe I'm shut up alone in here.
That makes no difference.
And you say that you penetrated a length of 50 feet to arrive here?
I do. That is about the distance that separates your chamber from mine. Only, unfortunately, I did not curve aright, for want of the necessary geometrical instruments to calculate my scale of proportion. Instead of taking an ellipse of 40 feet, I made 50. I expected, as I told you, to reach the outer wall, pierce through it, and throw myself into the sea. I have, however, kept along the corridor on which your chamber opens, instead of going beneath it. My labor is all in vain.
Oh, but tell me, I entreat you. Who and what are you? Never have I met with so remarkable a person as yourself.
Willingly. If indeed you feel any curiosity respecting one now, alas, powerless to aid you in any way.
Oh, say not so. You can console and support me by the strength of your own powerful mind. Pray, let me know who you really are.
Then listen. I am the Abbé Faria, and I've been in prison in the Chateau d'If since the year 1811. Previously to which, I had been confined for 3 years in the fortress of Fenestrelle. In the year 1811, I was transferred to Piedmont. But tell me this. Who reigns in France at this present moment? Napoleon II?
No.
Louis XVIII.
The brother of Louis XVI. How inscrutable are the ways of Providence. For what great and mysterious purpose has it pleased heaven to abase the man once so elevated and raise up the individual so beaten down and depressed?
But wherefore are you here?
Because in 1807 I meditated the very scheme Napoleon wished to realize in 1811. Because, like Machiavel, I desired to alter the political face of Italy. And instead of allowing it to be split up into a quantity of petty principalities, each held by some weak or tyrannical ruler, I sought to form one large, compact, and powerful empire. But it will never succeed now, for they attempted it fruitlessly, and Napoleon was unable to complete his work.
Pray excuse my question, but are you not the priest who is considered throughout the Chateau d'If to be ill?
Mad, you mean, don't you?
I did not like to say so.
Well, then, let me answer your question in full by acknowledging that I am the poor mad prisoner in the Chateau d'If. For many years permitted to amuse the different visitants to the prison with what he said to be my insanity. And in all probability, I should be promoted to the honor of making sport for the children if such innocent beings could be found in an abode devoted like this to suffering and despair. Quickly, I'll return later. Here, my arm.
Get up.
Well then, 34. Talking to yourself again?
Thank you for spending the hour. Please join us next week for another Audio Stages presentation.